one in four trans youth have attempted suicide in the last 2 years. And we know that that number has skyrocketed because of all of this misinformation.
In the legal battle over the constitutional rights of transgender youth, behind the strictly tailored legal arguments are real people, young people and their families.
I have kids on a regular basis that tell me, I don't even know why I should exist when my government hates me. That's a heavy load for a middle schooler to be carrying.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Legal technicality spares Ghana's no-promo homo bill. Third Japanese appellate court rules marriage inequality unconstitutional. And targeted trans kids and their families seek compassionate care. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending December 21st, 2024. Ghana's version of the no-promo homo law has withstood the Supreme Court challenges brought by two human rights lawyers. The December 18th ruling is based on a legal technicality, not the substance of the bill. Lawmakers unanimously approved the Promotion of Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values measure in late February. It had been promoted by a coalition of Christian, Muslim, and Ghanaian traditional leaders. President Nana Akufo-Addo has refused to sign it into law until the High Court rules on its constitutionality. Justice Avril Lovelace Johnson explained, "Until there's presidential assent, there is no act." Speaking for the seven-member panel in a televised announcement, he said both premature challenges were unanimously dismissed. Those convicted under the law would face up to 5 years in prison for the willful promotion, sponsorship, or support of LGBTQ+ activities. That means it affects both queer activists and their allies. The West African former British colony continues to criminalize private consensual adult same-gender sex, which is punishable by up to 3 years behind bars. It's unclear if Akufo-Addo will take action before his term expires. President-elect John Dramani Mahama takes office on January 7th. He has expressed support for the bill, but its constitutionality is yet to be determined.
A third Japanese appellate court has ruled that denying same-gender couples access to civil marriage is unconstitutional. On December 13th, the Fukuoka High Court followed high courts in Tokyo and Sapporo that came to the same conclusion earlier this year. The Fukuoka High Court is the first to declare that a ban on same-gender marriage violates the constitutional protection of the pursuit of happiness. It also said that the prohibition violates sections in the Constitution that guarantee equality, individual dignity, and the essential equality of both genders. Nine courts have ruled on the issue since 2019, and eight of them have favored equality. The Osaka and Nagoya High Courts are expected to issue their own marriage equality rulings in March. It's not clear if the issue will reach Japan's Supreme Court. The lower court rulings have all said it is up to Japan lawmakers to open the civil institution to gay and lesbian couples. Prospects for legislative action may have improved. Elections in October seeded a majority in parliament that favors marriage equality, according to the Mainichi Shinbun. The leading Liberal Democratic Party remains generally opposed, but its losses have forced it to form a minority government. More progressive MPs may finally make it yield to the public's overwhelming support for marriage equality. Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba has signaled his support for marriage equality, according to the Associated Press. He told a parliamentary session last week that he will not just sit back and do nothing. But it's not clear whether he can overcome the resistance within his party. More than 200 local municipalities across Japan have enacted some form of recognition to same-gender couples, although they are often more symbolic than substantive. Japan is the only major economic power without marriage equality.
4.5% of Australians, 16 years and older, are willing to declare that they are queer. This according to initial estimates from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. The ABS collated information from almost 45,000 people who responded to one of four recent Bureau health surveys. The younger generation led the way, with almost 10% of 16 to 24-year-olds identifying as LGBTQ+. Compare that to only 1.4% of Australians over the age of 75 declaring themselves LGBTQ+. One in three queer Australians is married or in a de facto relationship. Based on the four surveys, close to 179,000 Australians identify as trans or gender diverse. That's about 1% of the population. Less than 0.5% reported being intersex, about 63,000 people. Most queer advocacy groups appreciated the December 19th release of initial data, but press statements stress that the estimates are rough. Equality Australia CEO Anna Brown said, "We now know that LGBTIQ+ people live in every part of Australia, in regional, rural, metro, and remote areas. And this means local councils, service providers, and government agencies will be able to better serve the needs of our communities." CEO of LGBTIQ+ Health Australia, Nikki Bath, is not forgetting the uphill struggle to get the government to specifically count LGBTQ communities in the official census in 2026 at all. She'll grant that there will be questions related to sexual orientation and gender in that tally, while she laments that the opportunity to capture reliable data on intersex people and the gender of people under 16 years has been missed.
The United States Senate has approved a bill that bans access to gender-affirming health care for the children of military families. It's a provision of the National Defense Authorization Act, which funds the Pentagon for the next fiscal year. The vague wording of the measure makes it unclear if it just forbids surgeries or if it also prohibits treatments like reversible puberty blockers and hormone therapies. Lesbian Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin charged Republicans with poisoning the bill to score cheap political points using pediatric trans health care. Only 20 fellow Democrats supported her effort to remove the provision, however. The act passed by a vote of 85 to 14. The Human Rights Campaign's press release quoted President Kelly Robinson saying, "We entrust our nation's safety and freedoms to those who serve in the military. We ask them to make incredible sacrifices in defense of this country. In exchange, they deserve to be treated with respect and trusted to make decisions about their own family's health care needs." A majority in the Senate failed those families today. None other than Christian nationalist Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, inserted the anti-trans provision, which has already passed his chamber. Although outgoing President Joe Biden has promised to veto any last-minute anti-queer legislation, he will have no choice but to sign the vital Defense Department spending bill.
A policy that would prevent Montana trans people from changing the gender marker on their government documents is being blocked. District Judge Mike Minahan disagrees with the government's claim that discrimination against transgender people is not sex discrimination, so he's stopping enforcement of the law while its legality is being challenged. Gender-marked birth certificates, driver's licenses, and/or state IDs are required to get almost all other government documents, from passports to marriage licenses, even for exercising the right to vote in some states. Two trans women challenged the policy in April, charging that it breached constitutional equal protection guarantees. They're represented in the district court by the ACLU and the ACLU of Montana. A trial date has not yet been announced.
Finally, a quick and clever queer quip from Sir Elton John brought the house down this week on CBS TV's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
"You weren't always Elton John. You were born Reginald Kenneth Dwight."
Yes.
"Which is also a lovely name."
It's a name. And as soon as I could change it by deed poll, I did.
Well, it's Reginald is the male version of Regina, right? Which means queen.
Thank you.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending December 21st, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt. Stay healthy.
And I'm Melanie Keller. Stay safe.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. Hi, I'm Edmund White. While I live in Paris and have worked in many cities in the U.S., it is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful and impressive over the past couple of decades. And one radio program, This Way Out, has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Lies were the primary currency of Donald Trump's campaign for the U.S. presidency, and much of that currency was forked out in lies about transgender and non-binary youth. Lies are the basis for the fountain of new laws making it increasingly difficult to access life-saving pediatric gender-affirming health care. Those treatments are a state-level crime in more than half the country, where legislators have been unswayed by the scientific research or the endorsements of professional medical associations. While the lies and the laws get most of the attention, the founder of a transgender social service agency helps the targeted trans kids and their families navigate the nightmare.
In the legal battle over the constitutional rights of transgender youth, playing out before the United States Supreme Court, attorneys debate questions of substantive due process, quasi-suspect classes, and certiorari standards. Behind the strictly tailored legal arguments are real people, young people and their families, and their stories matter. I'm David Hunt. Join me for a conversation with the founder of a California nonprofit, working to assist trans youth and their families navigate the gender journey. On This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. There are stories like this one. Since the age of 3, Katie has known she wants to be a fashion designer when she grows up. When her preschool class did a project making hand-stitched bags, she was thrilled with the idea of making a purse. But her teachers told her, boys make book bags. Katie made a purse anyway, and embroidered a unicorn on it for good measure. Katie recently started her first year of high school. But every 6 months, she has to miss school to fly from her home in Texas to California to access medical treatment for her gender dysphoria. Texas officials have declared that Katie's gender-affirming health care is child abuse. The family will likely be forced to leave Texas for a more welcoming state. And there's this story. Wood is a 12-year-old from Central Ohio. He's been working to understand his gender identity since he was in the third grade. Eventually, he realized that he is a transgender boy. A few months ago, Wood and his mother visited with his primary care physician to start learning about medical treatment options available for gender dysphoria. They were referred to an interdisciplinary group of psychiatrists, psychologists, and endocrinologists at a regional children's hospital. In August, Wood and his mother were in an exam room when their doctor learned that an Ohio judge had allowed the state's ban on medical treatments for minors with gender dysphoria to go into effect. Wood and his family have had to explore other treatment options, none of which are practical or compatible with their daily lives. They believe their only remaining option is to travel out of state, a 6-hour round-trip drive, to receive the medical care that Wood, his family, and his specialist in Ohio all believe is an appropriate and necessary treatment option. Every trip to the pharmacy, the phlebotomist, or the doctor is a day-long affair. These stories, and others, are recounted in a Friend of the Court brief filed by a coalition of nonprofit agencies hoping to convince the United States Supreme Court to protect the rights of transgender youth in a case challenging Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for minors. One of the organizations that signed on to the brief is Trans Family Support Services, a nonprofit agency based in San Diego, California. Kathy Molig is the agency's founder and executive director.
1 in 4 trans youth have attempted suicide in the last 2 years. And we know that that number has skyrocketed because of all of this misinformation, because of the attacks. You know, I have kids on a regular basis that tell me, I don't even know why I should exist when my government hates me. That's a heavy load for a middle schooler to be carrying.
Molig knows the challenges facing gender nonconforming kids firsthand.
My son started his transition well over a decade ago when he was just 11 years old. And back then, most people didn't even know what the word transgender meant, much less it affected younger kids. We live in San Diego. We had no doctors who were willing to treat him. Schools had no idea how to best support him. It was before we have all the laws we do now in California.
She founded Trans Family Support Services to help others on the transgender journey. Since then, the agency has served more than 5,000 trans youth and their families across the country, providing family coaching, assistance with health care and insurance issues, help navigating the legal system, and school support. All services are free. That experience has taught her a lot about the transition process. It turns out there isn't a typical trans kid. But maybe, I suggested, that's the point.
That is absolutely the point. Every trans person's journey is very unique to them. When I'm working with my families, with my parents, I'm like, you know, it would make my job so much easier if I could just hand you a checklist and say, here you go. But that's like not what it's about, right? And we believe very much that the trans person isn't really the one transitioning. They're just aligning themselves with who they know themselves to be. It's generally the people around them that are really in this like transition. And so that's where our emphasis and focus really is making sure that every trans person has at least one family member who has education and knows how to support and affirm them.
I'm going to stop here to detour into the thinking of someone who doesn't support trans youth. Actually, two men. Tennessee Senate Majority Leader Jack Johnson and House Majority Leader William Lamberth. They're the authors of the Tennessee law that bans gender-affirming care, the law under review by the Supreme Court this term. If you assumed that the law offers a reasoned argument questioning the medical consensus that gender-affirming care is appropriate in many cases, you'd be wrong. The law is, well, a screed. It claims that gender-affirming care is harmful, unethical, immoral, and experimental. That doctors are performing gender reassignment surgeries on youngsters to make a lot of money. That doctors have posted naked pictures of children to advertise such surgeries. That the same pharmaceutical companies responsible for the opioid epidemic are making money from these procedures. That one of the pioneers in the field of gender-affirming care was a child abuser. And the law takes a swipe at Planned Parenthood, saying that the nonprofit health agency is responsible for killing tens of thousands of unborn children. The law repeatedly references surgeries to remove a minor's sex organs, perpetuating the notion that kids are undergoing sex change operations. That language mirrors claims made by Donald Trump on the campaign trail. Your boy leaves for school, comes back a girl, without parental consent. he claimed at one campaign stop. Was that a lie? Yes, it was.
The concept, and we heard during the campaign that, you know, kids are going off to school and they're being transitioned and they're getting sex change operations at school. And that is like the most ludicrous thing because that's not how it happens. There are no minors anywhere in our country that are getting access to any medical care of any kind without parental consent. That just doesn't happen. Gender-affirming care is simply any care having to do with someone's gender transition. And for some people, the only gender-affirming care they may access might be mental health care.
But the lies serve a purpose. The barrage of misinformation complicates the public discourse. Supreme Court justices, for example, debated the Tennessee law as if it were a good faith effort to address a public policy issue. That's not how Mollig sees it.
It is not done in good faith. All the medical evidence, all the mental health research, all the major medical and mental health associations all agree that gender-affirming care is life-saving care. So I don't know how taking that away could be anywhere near good faith. It's sensationalism. It is being used to wield power. It is used to set up discriminatory practices. None of that is in good faith.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, continuing my look at the lies and laws targeting trans and non-binary youth in the United States. Why lie about gender-affirming healthcare? If a politician told you he advocated denying appropriate medical treatments for gender dysphoria to young people, you might think he was overstepping his role as a policymaker. But you might applaud a politician who promised to protect kids from backroom sex change operations and left-wing gender insanity. It's framing theory. How information is presented to an audience influences the choices they make and how they process that information. It's not new. Sociologist Irving Goffman first published his research on framing theory more than 50 years ago. You know what else Goffman studied? Stigma. And that's another part of this story. Mollig explains.
It is exhausting when we think about the level of hate and discrimination that's coming. I mean, just looking at the idea of that Congress is working to pass the bill to keep trans people from using the restrooms. It's focused on one senator who happens to be trans, but there are lots of other trans and non-binary folk that work in that building that this has now disrupted their lives. They were going along just doing their job and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And now this is a disruption, right? And that's the goal of the people who are doing this. I'll just say today I talked to a new family. Their youth just recently told them about their gender identity. And instead of just being able to wrap around that and really care for this family in the way in which we have, I had to spend the first 20 minutes helping them to understand what the political landscape is looking like.
Outlawing gender-affirming care in some states creates gender refugees. Families forced to move to more welcoming states because they are, in essence, second-class citizens in their home states. On top of that, there are costs.
And it's not just expensive, but if you think about it, you're pulling your family out of where you built up your resources and probably have other family members close and your jobs and the other children in the family have relationships and rapport and sports and, you know, groups that they belong to. It is extremely difficult for families to up and move.
Families that can't afford to move to a state where gender-affirming care is offered are on the losing side of the nation's growing wealth gap. Many of these families have to choose between discontinuing gender-affirming care for their child or traveling across state lines to find providers willing to work with them. It's increasingly tough, Mollig says.
It's difficult for our families who are fighting and trying to navigate and getting their insurance to cover things, and now finding providers with 26 states that have banned this care. All of those people have to go to other states for their care, and it's impacted wait time. It impacts the quality of care because now we have so few providers compared to what the need is.
Sadly, trans and non-binary children suffer the brunt of the stigma. In its brief to the Supreme Court, Trans Family Support Services lays out the stark reality. It's a disheartening read. The distress caused by untreated gender dysphoria, they say, is often all-consuming, leaving transgender youth with little capacity to focus on other pursuits. Losing access to gender-affirming care can cause serious, lasting, and potentially life-threatening psychological and physical distress. All this because gender is the latest battleground in America's ongoing culture wars. Trans youth are the latest easy targets of the right, just as people with HIV/AIDS, gay and lesbian school teachers, and queer members of the military were in earlier times.
I talk to parents from a perspective of, as parents of trans people, regardless of the age of that child, our job is to help build resilience in our kids. That has become so much more important now. And so there's so much energy and efforts that have to be put into knowing what the fights are going to be, knowing what the challenges our kids are going to experience is, and then how do we go about still providing them with some hope for their future when the attacks are so great. We also have 11 states that have deemed themselves either safe havens or sanctuary states that we know this care is going to be protected as long as the state has the right to protect that. But 11 states is certainly not enough. We have trans youth in every state in this country, and they all deserve the right to medical care.
I'd like to thank Katie Molig, founder of Trans Family Support Services, for sharing her insights for this program. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
And finally this week, from all of us at This Way Out,
have a multicultural, gender-neutral, non-sectarian, unambiguous, ovo-lacto, vegetarian, nature-loving, sweet agrarian, non-polluting, mass-appealing, anti-looting, non-fur-wearing, all-inclusive celebration. Happy whatever to you.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Correspondent David Hunt reported from Raleigh, North Carolina. MA and the Therapy Sisters performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WLRI, Christiana, Pennsylvania, CKDU, Halifax, Nova Scotia, KKFI, Kansas City, Missouri, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.